Hi, and welcome to Deep Dive with Jamie Stein, where we take a deep dive look at all things reality TV, pop culture, and the world at large. I'm an intuitive and an empath, which means I pick up on the thoughts, feelings, and energy percolating in other people and the world around me. I believe there is meaning waiting to be found at every turn if you're willing to see it. So join me as we dismantle everything from trash TV to high spiritual concepts and learn more about ourselves, each other, and how we're all connected. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Jamie Stein. Whew, this feels like a very special episode for a couple of reasons. One, we're going to be getting into a subject that is very near and dear to my heart, and I have to imagine near and dear to a lot of the listeners' hearts as well, which is the real world, the grandmother of all reality TV. We're going to be specifically looking at the recent homecoming where the cast of Real World California, which I do want to say it was originally called Real World California. I know they've retroactively renamed it Real World LA, but for the real world nerd in me who did watch these shows in high school when they were first airing, I just want to say it was originally called Real World California, but there was the Real World LA homecoming. So we're going to be focusing on that and be getting into it, addressing issues of real world, large and small. It's also a significant show for me because, as some of you know, it actually is a show that I worked on. So when I first moved out to LA, I worked on 4 seasons of the show: Las Vegas, San Diego, Paris, and Philadelphia. And in some ways, which maybe we'll get into today, I don't know, or maybe I'll save it for another time, it also in some ways was linked to my evolving and unfolding spiritual journey and my relationship to intuition. And it kind of initiated the current path I'm on, which is a blend of using reality TV as a vehicle for exploration of psycho-spiritual issues. So, like I said, the real world, it's near and dear to my heart in many ways. We're going to get into it. And having said that, it's also a special episode because I feel like I've got 2 powerhouse guests with me to get into it with. The first guest that I will introduce, who has been on the podcast before, you know her, you love her. She's the host of What Else Is Going On podcast, Taria S. Faison. I got so many messages from people loving our last conversation about Candace and Potomac. Welcome back, Taria.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I'm at a Super Bowl and I was invited. So please know that I shared with my friends. I'm like, no, you don't know who I'm on this with. So there are other special guests. You throw out your 2 names and people are like, oh, wow. So yeah, I'm excited.
Wait, were you talking to my mom earlier? Is that what happened? Like, were you...
And your dad. And
yeah,
were
and my dad. Excited. Yeah.
Well, I guess on that note, no better time to bring out my second guest, who, you know, I would go so far as to say is a bit of an icon in the podcasting community, in the Bravo podcasting.
In the Bravo, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, he's willing
maybe
to concede.
Maybe. No, I'm joking even to that. No. I'm just a person, yeah. This is already idiotic. No, okay, yeah. It's me, Ryan.
You can own your power, Ryan.
You're a special person, time, yeah. Ryan.
I sure am a special person, yes. And a
This is a safe space to own your power for all of us.
I mean, by the way, we were talking about this before we started, and I think the amazing thing was that, like, I feel the same way. Like, Taria and Jamie, I feel like I've grown up with you guys through. I mean, we all started around the same time. We've all, you know, we do this on a weekly, if not daily, basis. And I mean, this is just pure enjoyment. I think Jamie even reached out and said, oh, are you worried you're going to be podcasting too much today to do this? And I go, no. I mean, first off, I don't cover the real world, and the real world's one of my favorite things. The real world is one of the things that got me. This was my love as a kid. Like, I was fixated on this show. I loved it so much. And it's been such a heartwarming / scary experience to revisit it in the way, you know, but like, this is, it doesn't get better about talking about something that you love with people that you love. Like, that's it. That's the whole point.
I agree. The real world, to me, the one we're going to talk about today, I watched, and then I watched one more, and then one cast member of one of them came into the job I was working at in Philadelphia. And she told me if I batted for her team, she would take care of me.
Whoa.
I don't know if you remember Anissa from.
Yes, of course.
How do you not remember Anissa?
Do you not bat for her team then? I would turn for Anissa.
Does she have the means to take care of you?
Well, maybe.
Did she win a challenge recently?
So my son is not, I'm still bragging about this. My son is 19 and it was when he was one. So I almost went right to Dick's Sporting Goods and said, hold that thought. I need and picked out a bat for her team. But yeah, I was like, oh, thank you. I walked back to the dressing room to help her and she just in full glory. I was like, wow. Hey, is there anything else you need?
She's like, do you like what you see, Taria? Do you like, I don't know why I gave her a sailor voice. Do you like what you see, Taria?
Yes. It was fascinating.
You got the full Anissa nudity experience because that was part of her real world persona, right? She was a naked Anissa.
Yeah. No blurs, no blur boxes.
Well, back in my day of working on the real world, there were no blur boxes. So yeah, I saw several of them naked. I feel like, is this like inappropriate for me to be talking about? I still don't even know what I signed and what I'm not supposed to be saying, but Brad,
if there's somebody from the real world checking everybody's podcast out there to say like, wait a sec, Jamie signed this 25 years ago and right. This is crazy. Yeah.
But you get nervous because you do sign this NDA and, you know, you don't want that to come back and bite you in the ass. And I think also because I did work on the show, and for anyone who doesn't know, my job literally, I was called a logger. And my job literally was to sit there and watch the tapes, the raw footage of the show. And I would literally log what was happening. There was a specially designed software where we would input the logs. And so literally I'm just typing, reporting to the story department. This is what's happening in this tape. This is what you should be paying attention to. And then the story department would read those logs and from the logs construct the episodes. All that is just to say my job is watching these people for hours. So you also do develop, you know, an affection for them. You really come to know them as human beings. So the casts that I had the opportunity to really be with in post-production through the TV screen, there is a part of me that it's like, I want to be a little careful about how I talk about them.
Yeah.
But it's like, I remember their Brad's thick eight was a topic of conversation on Real World San Diego. And, you know, he was not shy about letting us thick eight be
Vegas. Oh, you worked on an iconic season, Vegas. I mean, that was the first, as a kid, I was like, I didn't know, I hate to admit this, but I didn't know what a threesome was. I was like, whoa, Rochelle and the guy in the jacuzzi with the, I was like, what, two girl? Like I was blown away.
Vegas was definitely the season where everything changed. I mean, I feel like things had already changed. I feel like there was definitely a turning point. And again, I don't know where your guys' history is at with the show. I might be the oldest one here, but I was literally watching this from New York all the way through when it first ran. And so I remember definitely the point between London and Miami was the first shift because London was their quote unquote boring season. Though Justice for London, I've been revisiting it. I actually enjoy it. But Miami was the first season where they gave them a job. I think almost all of them were flown in as opposed to people like being from the actual city. So the show was already changing by the time we got to Vegas, but then I feel like Vegas just drew a line in the sand where any kind of residual flavor of what the show used to be about like young 20-somethings who were finding their way in the world and trying to make it work was just kind of flown out the window. And instead it was about who's hooking up with whom and partying, and it became a whole different beast.
Well, there was also real conversations that you had in these earlier seasons. And yes. We even see that in revisiting Homecoming is that we're right back in those serious conversations and actually some really amazing moments that those later seasons, they weren't having the most intense discussions on Vegas. Their behavior was intense. Their lifestyles were trying to be intense, but the conversations between them as humans were not. It's like almost like when Red Bull got introduced into the show changed. There was like this Red Bull vibe that the show started to have where it was like kids partying as hard and who they could hook up with as much as they could. And less about the interpersonal relationships, I feel, at least with these first two seasons, especially that we've seen on Homecoming, these aren't stars. These are real people. And I forgot how refreshing that is. It like almost brings a tear to my eye when I saw Homecoming, because I remember watching that as a kid in Los Angeles And do you guys like think about the difference between the New York and Los Angeles? I remember at the time, I was like, Los Angeles feels a little discombobulated or disorienting. Mm-hmm. But also I was like, that's also kind of how LA is. LA is not as close. Like New York, you had this vibe of the city of people being close and living all in this concrete jungle.
Yep.
And LA, there was like this distance I remember feeling as a kid. I could have been wrong about that. I just remember feeling like, this is weird. This isn't like New York. This is like all kind of spread out emotionally, which is so interesting to see now that they put themselves right back in there.
And it's the same thing. Yeah.
Same thing. And with, Tammy, you know, she was on Basketball Wives. She's now acting. She has done some amazing things in movies and TV now. So her Bonnet Chronicles are taking off. But she came in the house and she was that 19-year-old again. She didn't come in with a air of, I don't need to be here. It was like she was back to being 19 years old again.
It almost seemed like what you see on TV shows of like addicts being around their initial drug again.
Yes.
You know, and it puts them back into that. You know, you sense this weird under the skin nervousness with Tammy, especially she'd have that beer in her hand in the homecoming. And David, the same way. It's like you realize these things. That's what scares me about these homecoming ones as much as I love it. It was like New York was the same way, is that you realize as much as people can change, what scares me is people don't change. Like you see that David is still so like almost frozen in time.
Oh, yes.
The tension of that is fascinating to watch, but it makes me so sad because it's like, if we don't really work hard, you guys, we've got to like, we can't change our own lives. We're locked into this thing. And it was really powerful to watch. I don't know if you guys felt that.
Yes, I was screaming at my phone. I told you guys before we started recording, I was crying. I was laughing. I was enraged. I was angry because David and Tammy, for me, mirror a lot what goes on with Black women and Black men in the community. So the things he was saying, he was talking about her wig and she's bald underneath. And lately there's been like an upsurge, I'm noticing, of Black male podcasters bashing Black women. Like, this is why we don't date you. They talk about the hair. So it's like, this is now in 2022 and we're watching this. He represented to me all of these men that I've heard, these men that I've had conversations with. He represented to me a man that I'm going to go along to get along until something happens to my family member, then I need you to march in the streets. And he just left Tammy out there by herself. And that enraged me.
That's so interesting. I guess we're going to start getting into it. Well, first of all, I just need to say something, you guys. I'm asking for your help and your support because, yes, LA, that cast, it feels to me like the words I hear whenever I think about this cast is struggling to connect. And I experience these cast members. Oh, God. Sorry. Now I'm feeling things. It makes me suddenly feel so sad. I experience these cast members as people who I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think are fundamentally decent people. I think they're good people. I think they want to connect. I think all of them, I mean, I'm kind of scanning everyone in my mind, but I think most of them really want to connect. And yet there feels just like such a fear of truly dropping in. So this is what's happening for me in this moment. And I've talked in this podcast before about how I really feel like when I bring in a topic, it's creating a field for the topic, and that things that come up in this field and the way that I feel in this field and the way that you guys feel in this field is information about what we're discussing. And I notice what's happening for me, and the reason why I want to slow down, it just feels like there's this rush of energy that wants to move through me. It actually feels like it wants to move through my heart. And there's so much. There's so many different threads. There's so many things that want to be said. It's almost like it bottlenecks in the heart. And then there's this frantic voice in me that's kind of like, there's not going to be room and space for all this. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to say. I'm not going to be heard. Like, and then it just kind of gets frozen. And then I just feel stuck. And to me, it's like, that is the experience of this group of people where it feels like these are people on fire. They've got strong energy. They've got things to say, but it's almost like there's no trust that if they slow down and drop in to kind of hear one another, that they're going to be heard. And in the place where there's no trust, it's like, it's kind of like everyone's just fighting to get their voice out. And then they're just stomping on each other. And then in the place where they're stomping on each other, they're getting pissed off at each other. And then they just go in for the attack. And I feel like I just rewatched 93 because I was really curious to contrast the two. And it was just shocking to me. I was like, this was true back then, including, by the way, Aaron and Dominic, who were both very hot-headed as well.
By the way, I sorely missed them. I really wish I could have had an update on them at least, you know?
It was real. I thought about it so much, about how it would have been different if the two of them had been there. It was like a real loss, I felt.
Yeah.
Anyways, I know I'm sort of saying a lot all at once. I mean, I haven't even gotten into my response to you, but I just want to name that I just feel the sensation of all the energy that wants to move. And then I think, yeah, for me, LA almost as like a metaphor, or if I would distill it down, it does feel like a rush of energy that just moves really quickly. And I think you saw that in the fight with Tammy and David and how it escalated. But then even if you think back to 93, the whole blanket incident was literally about that. It was literally about something that needed to slow down because something was happening for Tammy and she didn't have the space to slow it down and say, wait, something's happening. And she got railroaded and then David was running with it. And then suddenly before anyone knew it, the energy had moved so fast that everyone was just kind of like spinning their wheels trying to make sense of it. And then it was just a clusterfuck. So I just want to like take a moment just for myself, just like breathe for the cast of Homecoming LA. Slow it down.
I was going to say, what you're saying is good. Like, I could see everything that you're saying. So, like, yeah.
Well, so let me just quickly respond to what you said. So, it was so interesting. So, I started rewatching the fight between Tammy and David, specifically after there had been the initial fight between the entire cast where Tammy felt very much alone and on an island. It's the next day. She sits down with David and basically says, I felt like you as a black man didn't have my back in this conversation about Black Lives Matter. And so I just kind of started intuitively feeling around. And it was so interesting because to your point, I was dropping into Tammy around what does it bring up for her to hear David saying essentially, look, this is my perspective. The thing that I want to say about this, first of all, this is how complex it is. What I think is so interesting is that, first of all, David goes into this conversation saying, we are two different people who have two different perspectives, which to me was such an interesting bookend to how Homecoming started when Tammy came in saying the exact same thing about the blanket incident. And I remember when she said that, I was like, holy shit, Tammy, she's smart and she's perceptive and she's wise.
Yes.
And she was saying we were two people in one situation, but it meant two different things to both of us. And she was so clear about that, right? And it was David who was having trouble with it in that moment.
Yep.
Now, in this conversation, David's the one saying, hey, there's something going on in the world. We're two people having two different perspectives. And for me, it felt like Tammy was the one in that moment, at least initially, who was having difficulty taking in the fact that David is saying, look, this is my point of view. You're getting upset because it's not what you think. But I just wanted to name that. So what was interesting to me, though, in dropping into Tammy, I did really feel like looking at David and taking in this guy who's saying, look, yeah, the systemic stuff, whatever, it's got to start within the community first. And it's got to start with black men not killing black men. And as Tammy, it was exactly what you were saying, Taria. It was just this feeling of like, I'm here. Like, I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to go. I want you to meet me here. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're not meeting me here, it makes me feel so abandoned by you. And for me, as Tammy, what I really heard was like, well, first of all, man up.
Yep.
And then it's like, where are the men? Like, where are the fucking men here? And like, I want to be met by men here. Which, of course, also brought me back to her history. I forget what happened with her father, but I know he wasn't around. And I know she was, like, homeless with her mom. So, oh, and that was the other part of it, too, with him. It's like, as Tammy, it was this feeling of, like, I'm ready to meet you here. I'm ready to walk with you, both as a man in this community, but you, David, like, we've had our shit.
Yes.
And I am ready to be with you here. And the fact that you're not meeting me in my fire, in my energy, in my passion, I feel so let down. And I sort of judge you as like an emasculated, weak male.
And to me, it would have been different if he didn't go to the tropes that people have said about Black. When you notice, he kept talking about her wig. And she was bald and she was this, and he kept calling her out of her name. And I was like, I don't like this. And he was purposely agitating her. Like, if I'm in the room with you guys and I'm fighting with you guys, I'm not picking up my phone and walking back and forth in front of you, talking about you, unless I'm trying to agitate you on something. Tammy went to bat for him before that when they were on the boat and he was smoking at the table, asked like, hey, do you mind that I blow weed in your face while we're sitting here? Like, I just feel like that's Beth, blonde Beth. What do y'all think of her? Because I felt like somehow she managed to make every situation go back to her.
It's like some people, like I said, don't change.
Okay.
She's exactly who she was in the show originally. Okay. And she's exactly the same way now. And it's so frustrating because it makes you think about your own persona and what you like. It's almost like your Achilles heel. Like you can't help but be this way.
Yeah.
It's got to be frustrating because I don't know if she's super aware of it. At this point, she's been told it by so many people, including the viewing audience, and to still have that urge, even like in the example of like, John, you wouldn't be the minister at my wedding. John, why would you do this on the boat? And he's like, Tammy, come on. No, you know, it's a nice thing, you know, and John's such a sweet man that really is not struggling, but like just has decided his life of this dream that he had. We, you know, I thought John was going to be a country star because I don't even know country music. I was like, he's going to be a country star. To accept the fact that that potentially didn't happen for him, the death of his father, all of this stuff. And for Beth to still go, I'm going to make this about me. Why didn't you step up for me? It's classic Beth. It is classic Beth. And that was what's so frustrating because you're like, let it go. You prefer to let it be go because it would help me let things go in my life because I want to know that I can let things go. That's why this thing is such a cautionary tale to really be careful about how we live our lives. I feel like we can, it's all going to go by in a blink. I mean, we haven't even talked about the fact that, you know what, 25 years ago, like it feels like yesterday for me. I feel like I'm watching that blanket being ripped off going like, it wasn't not funny. It wasn't not funny. Tammy saying to David, that's burned into my memory. And to see that David can forgive or says he's going to forgive, but you can see he can't forgive. You can see he can't let it go. And then to hear Tammy's story about wiring her jaw shut so she wouldn't eat. Like Tammy was going through such intensity and she's an intense woman. She has so, like you said, she's wise. She's all of these things. There's so many things going on in Tammy's mind, but it's just like this forces of what Jamie was saying earlier, just like this disconnection, but at the same time, butting each other's heads because they're trying to connect so much.
And not let like Beth brought up feelings for me with women that I have experienced. I felt like Beth was trying to impose her energy onto Tammy, even with her verbiage when she comes into the house. Not, oh, hey, Tammy, I tried to DM you. You didn't DM me back. It's, I tried to DM you. You didn't even bother to respond back. I guess it's not important enough to have a relationship with me. And then when Tammy shut down instantly, because my husband was like, he said, it hurts when someone thinks that you don't care about them and they're saying you don't care about me. And you're like, I do. I said, in that moment when Tammy cried for me, I don't like crying, especially when it's coming from a raw pain. Watching it and crying, that's a different emotion, right? But when it's coming from a pain and you're sitting either sitting there or no one gets up to just touch your arm because they all say the same thing. Girl, you are so strong. And for two people who didn't know her to come in, and then Beth comes upstairs. If you notice, Beth said to David, I would have went to Tammy, but I didn't want there to be an imbalance. So it's almost like calculating to me. You had an issue with David. This person who you want to get to know so well just revealed something that still bothers her. And you didn't want there to be an imbalance. So you didn't go comfort her. And you told that to David. Now you want to come upstairs and sit in my face and say, I would have came to you. And I was glad when Tammy said, don't come up here with that. And I find that I struggle with that too. Like people don't know it, but if I'm bringing up an issue to you that is like deep within me and it's just like, oh, okay. Wow. I shut down. They don't know it, but I'm like, okay, so they'll never get that part of me again.
I think you're speaking to the dynamic that reveals itself in LA and kind of this pain of like passing ships and miscommunication, right? Because you just named it, right? They might not even know what's going on with you. It's just like both Tammy and David said, right? We're two people having two different experiences or two different perspectives of the same experience. So if you're not willing to share that, hey, this is actually a deep issue, I don't feel like I'm being seen and heard, that's painful for me, can you meet me here? Mm-hmm. But instead, stop short of that moment, because if we're taking in information of, hey, this person didn't respond in the way that I really wanted them to. And I'm interpreting that through an old lens that, you know, kind of like what Tammy was saying, you don't actually care about me. Mm-hmm. There is actually no loyalty here. And that assumption is so painful for me in an old historical place. I'm going to try to protect myself by shutting down and punishing you, as opposed to, okay, wait a second. Let me stay with this process of trying to connect and say, hey, this is the moment. This is the moment where something really hurts, because I feel like I'm sharing something with you and I don't feel like I'm being met here. And that's what's really painful for me. Because it's interesting, you really felt Tammy's side of that. I want to say, I, as someone who's been involved with group process work, who's facilitated group process work, I'm really mindful of honoring people's, I mean, I'd call it boundaries, honoring. If someone walks away, I mean, it depends. I'll feel into it in the moment, but I very might well take that in as they want to be alone right now. Like, let them have their moment. I don't want to make it about me. I mean, again, maybe I'll feel an impulse. I don't know. And I want to be clear. Typically, I'm not like siding with Beth. I could understand her feeling between a rock and a hard place of there is this history and they're just starting to make inroads in this conflict with David. I forget exactly where that moment fell in, if they'd already aired the footage where he was like breaking down in the past or not, but they're sitting here trying to achieve some sort of healing. And this was the guy who felt railroaded against and ostracized in the past and teamed up against. So I can imagine feeling like, wait a second, I don't want to just leave him behind. I can imagine feeling stuck and frozen and not knowing what to do in the moment, right?
Yeah.
And I believed both John and Beth.
Oh, yeah.
When they heard Tammy on the porch, and it affected them. Mm-hmm. And it was just so interesting because Tammy wouldn't let herself take in the fact it's happening, Tammy. The connection you want is happening right here, and you won't let it in because you've already made up your mind that they've somehow betrayed you or disappointed you. And now you're closing yourself off to the connection that could be happening right now.
That's what's so frustrating as an audience member, is that we see like, man, Tammy, great person. So the depth there, there's so much there. And then we can see immediately like what she's doing, of what you said she's doing, of like, yo, like, you're, how are you this good? And you can't go there. You can't do that. Like, it's so frank, because this is when you do scream at the TV in a reality show. And the great thing about these shows, and The Real World really started it off for me, but I guess you could extrapolated to Housewives, is that the camera picks up on basic truths about people, period. You can say you got a bad edit. You can say you did this, but it basically, like, even with the David stuff, is that, listen, from David's mouth, we got to hear in one of the first episodes, this put a scarlet letter on him. This ruined a career that was really taking off, of him saying, I had to go out and get every job once I got let go from The Real World, until before the episode aired. But the thing is, also, we tell ourselves these stories so we can live our lives, that we can like be okay with ourselves. And the thing is that is very true what David said in some ways, but also it doesn't speak to the bigger truth of who David is and was as a person. Yeah. He was this person from the get-go. Like, I remember David before this situation happened, and I was like, something is off with David. Like, there is like some deep stuff that he is not dealing with. And that's what's so sad, is he had this thing to blame it all on. Because I think David would have self-destructed regardless of that situation in life. But this, you know, he was able to blame it on this instead of actually doing the real work. And then you see with the drinking,
his hands shaking.
Yeah, he's got the DTs. Yeah. He's got this. And it's like, he's able to like burn it down to this one moment that these people did to him. And he's not really able to accept that. This is just a messed up situation between young people, and to have it last your entire life. Like, he's still in that moment. Like, Tammy is still in many moments. And that's what's so sad, because you're just like, dude, there's this good-hearted person that you see in David. There is. But then there's also this hair trigger. But like you said, even with the weed on the boat, it's like, I'm always a person of like, hey, is this okay if I do this? I'm fine with doing that. I'm fine with like, I'm like, let's the greater good. There's nothing personal about me if you wouldn't want me to smoke weed in front of you. That's your personal choice. It doesn't say anything about me. It's okay to like worry about how other people feel or how they are around you, instead of taking this bigger message from it of like, how dare you, Beth, looking at me like a weed smoker, you know?
Yes. In the old days and in the new days, he references on camera. You're doing this on camera.
Yeah,
on camera. So what you were saying, Ryan, is so true as far as David and even going back to his language. It's like when he gets to his hair trigger, everything is an issue. They bring up smoke. He said, I wasn't smoking. It's like semantics, like, oh, you weren't smoking, you were vaping, but it was an issue for him. And then Beth, here's what I think with Beth, honestly, and even Irene, and then with Tammy, I'm just going to be honest. This is what I told my husband. I feel like they classified him as a rapist, right? And Tammy's now the black woman that got the black man kicked out of the house. So he's definitely still has issues with Tammy as far as that. I feel like he felt like Tammy should have stuck up more for him, which triggers him right back to him name calling her. Because if you notice in his good moments, he's like, oh, leave the queen alone. That's the queen. We love the queen. And then he has a hair trigger with Beth and Irene. She goes through life like a cop. Like a cop has to be emotionless on his job to do his job. And I feel like every situation to her is like she's on duty. I don't really get a lot from her, but I feel like he won't say, you two ladies classify me as a rapist. You know what that would do to me, a black man in America. And Tammy, you didn't say anything to them. So I feel like he holds all that, but won't say that. But yet he then talks about staying within the system. The system isn't designed for us. We just got to learn how to play within the system because of what happened to him. That's what I feel like.
Do you think, you know, as a black woman, do you think David uses, like, this thing is very real, like what he's talking about, a discrimination and stuff like that. But do you think sometimes David has used it and it's almost hurt him doubly because he then doesn't actually work on the actual issue he has with it, like his actual hair trigger anger and all of that stuff? Is that a possibility, or is this all coming from discrimination and things like that?
You're saying he is using it, but the opposite end. I think he feels all these things, like these two white women said this, and now look what happened to me in this industry, but he's not saying it. So instead, it's almost like where Tammy's fighting for, we got to change things in the system, fight for black rights. He's like, this black woman didn't fight for me then. Look what happened to me. But he's not saying that.
Which is such a dangerous way of looking at things. It's such a dangerous of like, oh my gosh, it's like chills.
Oh my God, you guys, there's so, you guys just both said so yes. Much. So again, going with the theme, there's so much that wants to come through me. So let me just kind of slow this down and cherry pick what feels most important. I mean, I just think everything you said, Taria. So I dropped into David in relationship to this conversation with Tammy. I agree with you. It's kind of like, my sense of David in general is that this is just a guy who has such a deep relationship to feeling misunderstood. And I think it is so painful for him. Because again, to me, he kind of embodies that LA cast vibe of, I actually really want to connect. Mm-hmm. But I think there are ways in which he's very emotionally limited. I think he gets in his own way and I think he gets misunderstood. If you guys will indulge me for a moment, I thought it was really interesting that he went back to that moment in 93 where he was making a joke about the party and about being like looked at like he was stealing things, and that John then misunderstood that joke and was like, what, you were stealing things? Because when I rewatched 93, that moment stood out to me so deeply where I could just feel how hurt David felt. Like, it's like, I'm sitting here joking. Like, I'm trying to joke with you. I'm trying to connect with you. And rather than meeting me here, you're totally misunderstanding me and you're stereotyping me. And it felt so painful. And it just feels like David, his experience is kind of like there's a voice in him that he's not even conscious of. And I felt like he was trying to do this even in terms of the BLM conversation of, wait a second, there's more here. I want to slow this down. There's room for multiple voices, but he doesn't have, kind of like Tammy in that moment with Beth and John. It's like, he doesn't have the presence and the maturity to slow things down and to say, wait a second, we need to slow this down. There's more that wants to be said. And instead, I think all that comes in for him is, I'm being misunderstood. I'm being labeled as something wrong and bad. And to your point, Taria, though, when I dropped into him. So there's Tammy saying, look, there are systemic issues. We've got to deal with that first. We deal with the system, and then maybe it won't be black on black crime. That's where we go first. When I drop into David around that, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like, first of all, it's like, don't put these demands on me. Oh, now you want me to show up? Like, where were you for me when I needed you? Where was the community for me. Like, I've got needs. You're telling me I have to step up and be this man and be this Black warrior and be a king to your queen? No one tended to me when I needed help. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, to both of your points, it's like, and then we saw that play out in a really, I'm sure it's true in a cultural systemic way, but then in terms of his real world experience on TV, we at least know that's one instance of feeling personally misjudged, mislabeled, railroaded. And so then, yes, going back to even the pot at the boat, because to be honest, even though I do think it's really obnoxious to be smoking pot and to not, that is a huge trigger for me. I'll say I had no problem with him bringing up the cameras because I was like, I get where you're coming from. There's something about this coming from Beth and there's something about it happening on camera. And I do want to say when I drop into Beth towards David, there's like a cruelty there. There's kind of like, you're going to be the outsider, not me.
Well, because Beth can only win. I mean, Beth looks at things as like win or lose or anything like that. And Beth can only assert dominance in situations like David because Beth isn't, and I hate to say this, some people just aren't magic. Some people don't have, and I don't mean magic in the sense of like, you know, you're still a person, you're still living your life, but some people are like touched by some divine gift where you want to watch them, you want to listen to them. And unfortunately, Beth is not that person. You don't unfortunately want to watch her. You don't want to listen to her. And it, I mean, in that sense, we are watching and listening to her, sure. But you know, those people that pull you in,
yes,
that you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know why, but I can't take my eyes off this person. And Beth tried to be an actor. You know, it's just like,
yeah,
there's that whole thing of Los Angeles. There's a whole, I would say, I used to teach acting. There's like 70% of the actors that come to LA shouldn't ever consider even being an actor. But it's, wow, that thing to do, right? It's that thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, you're good in your high school production of Oklahoma and you're told that you are a star. And like, why can't I be a star?
Right.
And so Beth also, you would have to imagine, she doesn't bring this up, which is shocking to me, but you have to imagine the pain to realize, just like John in a way, even though John has true talent, pain to realize that things didn't happen. You know, like you deal with dreams when you're dealing with actors, you're dealing in dreams. Like, mm-hmm, you know, with accounting, I don't think you might love accounting, you might have a calling for it, but you didn't grow up as a kid like, oh my God, I dream about doing numbers for a rich person and tax shelters. You don't dream that way. So Beth is like, the things I would be fascinated with Beth, we don't even talk about.
Right.
But, and then the David point I wanted to make was that it's unfortunate, I feel sometimes, that it's not this burden for him, but he's talking about his experience as a Black man. And sometimes it negates his experience as an actual person because, mm-hmm, he's then speaking about himself, like this issue he has with anger, he now has it through the lens of being a Black man. Now, I like worry about me being good all the time, but I don't worry about me being good as a white man. That's a privilege I,
right,
have.
Okay.
I worry sometimes about being a man, like about, okay, how I come across as a man, but not a white man. But David has to worry about who he is as a Black man.
Yeah.
Instead of just as a person. And I think there's like this weird difference of like, this dude is obviously in some really pain even before The Real World the first time went around. He's never able to deal with this because, I mean, in a way, I don't know if he's trying to tell Tammy that, you know, but it is interesting that it keeps getting brought up in regards to the struggle.
Right. And I also feel like he had a certain bravado about him when you watched him on his tape and all of that. And sometimes in his interviews, but there is also a fear. So if I can hold on to, yes, my career was damaged by you guys, but if I can hold on to that, if I never make it, if I can't go back on the road and be successful, I can always go right back to it's because of this.
Mm-hmm.
So like you said, Ryan, he's holding on to that.
And to be honest, it never really made sense to me because my memory of audience reaction to the blanket incident was actually that people really took issue with the way it was dealt with from, I mean, especially Beth and Irene and to, I think, a lesser extent, Tammy. And I remember there being very clear, strong conversation that David was treated unfairly in that instance and that the rapist label was unfair. So to me, it's never quite made sense. It's never quite added up.
But Jamie, because you're right, though, I remember watching that going, this is ridiculous. He's out of the house for this. But on the other hand, I also didn't like David even before this incident.
Oh, totally.
And that's what Tammy said. She
that's
said,
what I'm
I
saying.
Didn't like
so,
him
like,
before.
When you don't like this person, you're like, you're a bad energy anyways, dude. But I thought it was completely insane. I mean, and now even hearing Tammy's side, I hear and feel a little bit more of it. Mm-hmm. But remember, Beth played a part in that.
I heard that conversation. I remember hearing women saying he was a rapist and he was
she was laughing and then switched to you're a rapist. Beth spearheaded that, you know?
And that's why this is so compelling, because I was crying when they showed David, and to hear him cry and hear his pain, I felt like he was owed a conversation, because everything he said was true. They were laughing. My issue with David was then when Tammy said, this is why I was laughing, he continued to laugh. But in that moment, I felt like, wait a minute. And I also feel, going back to, like you said, Ryan, he's viewing it through a Black man. There were other white men. One started pulling the blanket first. The other one did the wrestling count, but I got kicked out. And there's something about Irene that makes me so angry. Beth, I can kind of see, okay, we know what we're dealing with Beth. And I don't think that Beth is inherently a bad person. Not that I think Irene is, but there is something about her that just, it eats me. And I don't know why.
I want to get into Irene because I actually have a similar reservation with her, which is interesting because she presents so well. But yeah, to me, going back to the blanket incident, well, first of all, yeah, I mean, again, even just the blanket incident, I know I said this before, how fast it moved, but then also the way it was perceived by the audience. Like, I think so much stuff got lumped together because it was so fast. And so there's part of me that really wants to say this as someone who just watched 93. I want to say justice for Tammy in a way, because as she has owned, she was a young woman. She was uncomfortable in the situation. She didn't know how to find her strong, clear no. She was laughing out of discomfort. But what I do want to say very clearly, she said this in Homecoming, the word rapist never came out of her mouth. Yes. And actually, when you watch that, she literally says in 93, she's like, I'm not speaking for Beth and for Irene. This is where I'm coming from. And again, it was interesting for me to watch that because Beth and Irene, they seemed much more in the collusion of it.
Yes.
Like, here's an energy to sort of pick on David in a way. Tammy was very clear, I am speaking for me and for me alone. And there was something even about that when I was watching it, I was like, wow, because I just remember there was this perception of her back then as just this raving bitch. And when I was rewatching it, I was like, I don't really know where this came from. Actually, I'm seeing all this evidence that there's something, even though, yes, she shuts things down. And I want to speak to that in a moment. There's something really mature and wise about the way she takes in situations and has the presence of mind to say, wait a second, no. Irene and Beth are over there.
Yeah.
I'm over here doing me. There's something about the ownership of her experience in that that I really appreciated. Now, what I will say, and again, she owned this in 2021. She said, my regret, what I did was I shut everything down rather than being willing to have a conversation with you. And it's so funny, Taria, because that brings me back to what you shared about, like, those moments where if I'm sharing something deep with you and you don't receive me in a certain way, like, my bid for control and power is I'm just going to shut it down. Mm-hmm. It's almost like if I could pinpoint the moment where this whole cast goes wrong, it's those moments where something's coming up that's deep and vulnerable. It's not being seen and heard in a certain way. So rather than staying with it and being like, oh my God, guys, this is so painful. Can you imagine if David in that moment where Tammy's rage was coming at him, because suddenly the experience is catching up with her. Holy shit, this blanket was ripped off me. I said no, he didn't listen. Can you imagine if David, rather than shutting down in that moment and getting, you know, he just went somewhere with it that was so rageful. And he did not do himself any favors in that moment. If instead in that moment, he had been willing and able to go into his heart and feel how deeply this was hurting him and like had that moment that he had behind the scenes with the crew and could feel perhaps his remorse, could feel also the pain of being misunderstood of like, hey, I didn't realize and I'm sorry. And it's so painful that this is what you think of me. I bet the whole situation, it very well might have turned out differently. But instead, like, what does Tammy do? She shuts down. I won't talk to you. What does David do? He shuts down. I'm going to poke you and poke you. And that's what he does in 2021 too, right? Tammy,
right.
His point of view, he's sitting there like, holy shit, this whole thing's happening again. Mm-hmm. There's a viewpoint I have that's not being seen. I'm going to get misjudged again. Okay, let me shut down, shut off. I'm going to go in for the kill. This is how I'm going to reclaim my power. You're going to regret ever fucking messing with me. And then the whole thing just goes
exploded.
Off.
Exploded. I feel like too, when you look at somebody like a Beth, there's also, yes, she puts herself in every situation. However, there is something to be said for someone who can so easily be vulnerable. I was taught growing up, you don't cry unless you have something to cry for. And do you want me to give you something to cry for? And you better suck it up because there's other stuff we got to deal with in this world with you crying. I may have seen, I'm 44, get ready to be 45. I think I may have seen my mom cry twice. I see my grandmother cry once. All my aunts I've seen cry once at funerals. So to me, there is something, and it almost scares you when Tammy was telling Beth, oh, don't start that crying again. It's like, You're forcing me to almost be vulnerable. For me, vulnerability and transparency are two different things. Tammy has no problem being transparent. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I can be transparent and tell you my deepest, darkest secrets all day long. But if I'm vulnerable, I'm saying, can you hold my hurt for a second? Because it hurts too much. And if you drop it, or if you laugh like David, now I may never recover. So instead, I'm just going to go, no, you don't get that. I'll be transparent with you and share you, but you will never get my vulnerability. So that's what I sensed with Tammy. And I think Beth kind of triggered her a little bit because Beth was just so open with her feelings. I love you, Tammy. I want to get, and she's crying and it's like, get out of my space. I told you I'm not going to be vulnerable. And I know I've gone through life pretty much like that because my mom and my grandma, you don't be crying. And a lot of it was, you don't let those white folks see you cry. You better suck it up. Mm. I imagine if you watch Basketball Wives, you would see Tammy's mom. It was like the same way. You gotta be. And I honestly think Tammy has a mistrust of Irene and Beth because of what they said about David. Mm. She's not going to say that. But I think she mistrusts them because they were so quick to label him. So I think a part of her, she's smart. She knows, okay, I'm not speaking for Beth and Irene. I'm speaking for me. Because in her mind, because I don't really trust them either like that.
Well, and they were kind of co-opting her experience.
Yeah.
You know, and I think on some level, she probably liked the support. But I'm sure, like you said, and like I've said, she's a smart woman and she's perceptive. And I'm sure there was a part of her that was clocking these two women, not that Irene's white, because she's not, but these two women.
Right.
Yeah, are co-opting my experience. And there's something here that they're doing.
It doesn't but feel right.
The thing that I think is so interesting about the Beth situation, and I'm curious about both of your perspectives on this, is that it's so interesting because there's a way in which Beth hasn't changed, right? But then I also think there's a way in which Beth has changed in the sense that, you know, I don't know if you guys watch the challenges or if you've ever watched the challenges, but there was sort of a moment where Beth was doing a bunch of challenges, right? And she constantly was made into the villain and people didn't like her. She was the outsider. And Beth, what's so interesting is she, for a real moment in time in the BMP cinematic universe, leaned into being a villain. And it was interesting to me because I almost in that place see the connection between her and David, where it's like, oh, you're going to put me on the outside. You're going to misunderstand me. Guess what? Like, the bitch is back in action. Like, that's kind of how she operated on these challenges. And so it's been interesting for me to watch her both on the recent All-Stars, like they did that little All-Stars challenge resurrection, and then on Homecoming, because something has softened in her. And it's hard for me. I just notice myself trying to feel into that trajectory for her, where to your point, there is something that's softer and more vulnerable now. But also to the other point, there's something she's still doing that's largely unconscious and very much the same as she was in 93, and just where these shifts have happened or not happened and sort of where she's even at in relationship to herself.
But also, Jamie, I feel like she fell into that villain role because she's trying to find any place where she can get attention, any place, like whether it's unconscious or conscious, like they accept her as a villain role. So she leaned into that villain role. She wanted to actually, like, I got attention for being this type of way. I mean, that's what a lot of reality stars will lean in to being a villain. And I don't particularly think Beth was a great villain either in those challenges. No, I mean, like, honestly, like I felt like, oh, okay, you know, like yeah. I accept that you're, but it was like she was, I don't even know what villain was the word. It was like nudge, you know, like it's not nudge, you know, like there's this vibe that I think certain people have around them. And Beth, to me, I've never met her in real life, but according to TV, that's what I pick up on so strongly. But it's also somebody that's really wanting attention and love so bad, yeah. no matter how they can get it.
And they're not conscious of the person you're trying to demand that from. They could be in a deficit and not even know how to love themselves. But now you're demanding this from me. I can't give that to you. I'm still struggling myself. And it's like, she reminds me of Hannah Burner, where she needs to suck every piece of air out of the room when she's upset about something or when she's hurt. The fact that she couldn't even hear John say something was big to me. He had just started in pastoring, and the person over him, the person who was mentoring him, was asking him, in my opinion, rightful questions. Do you know the couple? Do you know him? Do you know? Okay, well, for me, I don't think you should do this. He was a young kid. Of course, he's going to listen to his mentor. Outside of all that, I feel like that's a conversation they probably already had. And then you bring it up on camera when you find out that he is renewing Irene's vows. She could not hear, number one, well, it's not the same thing. It's a vow renewal. And then she puts herself in the middle. Doesn't understand why. I mean, she's been married 4 times. And then when you realize what you've done, do you want to wear my diamond earrings? No, I don't want your earrings. See, that would have been, but see.
Well, to be open to being that petty is wild. Yes, like to be completely open with that is like, because I would have known, even if I felt that inner jealousy, and maybe this is a fault of mine, I do feel inner jealousy sometimes, but I don't say it. I don't want to hurt the situation even right. further. Like, so I will hold that in it. Maybe Beth is the most healthy person ever because she lets us know every horrible thought and jealous thought that she has in her mind. But I would just never do that for so many reasons. For my yeah. own pride, I don't want to exacerbate a situation. That's what's so interesting about these reality shows. These people saying things that if we usually have our normal person filters on, we would never say in a million years right. because we don't want to make waves, or we realize that we want to try to get along with the majority of people. And also, just real quick, to bring in Beth A, now the other Beth. Now here's somebody that is so open to learning. Here is somebody that's yes. wanting to take in. I mean, I don't even know if it's to a fault, but here's somebody that started off as you know, promoting a queer lifestyle, which was amazing and very, you know, and then it explains that how she didn't think she'd be married either. She fell in love with this man. It wasn't all of a sudden she wasn't gay. She just fell in love with this person, and they have this beautiful, but her trying to understand her family, it's like when somebody's willing to be completely open. Yeah, I don't know. I found her fascinating as well.
Me
in
too.
A completely different way, because she was just so wanting to accept and to learn and to try to help people rather than hurt people.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, she's always been the anomaly in this cast. I mean, again, going back to 93, she truly is the only one who wasn't so stubborn and headstrong. And I keep thinking about Glenn in all of this. In 93, that was, to me, Glenn typified in 93, this desire for connection and then this rage that comes out when the connection doesn't happen. Because I don't know if you got, this is such a minor scene, but like there was literally an episode where Glenn was like getting everyone together, and he was like, everyone was writing down questions and they were answering them. And because Glenn was saying, I want to get to know you guys. And Glenn talked about, I guess, being one of many brothers, and it was hard to kind of find space to have your voice. And I just got this really deep energetic impression of, yeah, this kid who's saying like, I want to connect, but like getting stomped out. And so then feeling like the only way he can get heard and possibly get these needs met is to like go in and go hard. And Glenn to me really embodied that split of like, yeah, I want to connect. I have a heart, like there's stuff I want to give, but the second that, yeah, I don't feel I'm being received or you're not meeting me here, it goes from 0 to 60. And he's another one who just had such a kind of aggro demeanor and would just go in for the kill. But what was interesting was that back in 93, he and Beth A really bonded.
Yes.
And so there was some sort of opening he found with her, you know, some sort of softness that clearly she gave him permission to feel. And so it's just, it's been interesting to me in terms of like the constellation of this cast that you've got all these people who are so stubborn, so married to their viewpoints, so unwilling to hear each other. And then in the middle of all of that, you have Beth Anthony.
Right.
Strange. And I wonder for her, like, what's this experience like?
Like, even to your point about Glenn, like you said, he goes from 0 to 60 when David threw the apple at him and they go up on a deck and David's like, my name is David. And he calls him Dave on purpose and says, oh, I mean, Dominic, you know, I'm going to come at you a little bit. But then I was like, oh, no.
Also with Glenn, I feel like it's an example also of like not everybody is working with a complete full deck. Not everybody is like when he was using, he goes, yeah, I used to use the N-word to my friend, but it's okay, because he truly seemed like he didn't understand. And not in a no F you, I'll say what I want to say.
I agree.
He truly seemed like he thought he was doing the right thing and he's got to explain it. Like, no, you guys don't get it. I'm on your side. See? And it was fascinating because it just, the concept just, you could see it not landing in his head of why he wasn't being like celebrated for the, you know, like it was so bizarre. And I don't think he is a racist. I don't think he's full of hatred. I don't think he's any of that. But I just think sometimes, and we saw that with Glenn too, there was this kind of disconnect even within Glenn. He came in as a replacement. He was always just around. Is he like a punk rock guy? But it never fully landed on what he was or who he was. And I thought it was so beautiful him talking about his partner that had died and like the mouse scene in the desert. I thought that was like a really nice thing of like, you do realize everybody, every human on this earth has like this beautiful little moment within them or this side or this depth of feeling, where we saw that with Glenn talking about his ex. And it really comforted me, not that he was dealing with pain, but that he actually has the ability to feel those things
and acknowledge them. It was interesting. I felt like with Glenn, there was something being implied by Beth. She was implying something about Glenn's what happened. She's like, I know the story. I'm just waiting for him. And I felt like he was trying to fully say what happened and wouldn't. Then we get, it's funny, Ryan, you mentioned when they go to Joshua Tree, when the rat ran by, it was a mouse, I thought, but then someone said rat. And I'm like, they look a little different. But
Beth kept calling him a rat.
Yeah. And I was like, that's not what they look like. But he said, this is Kim giving me permission. When the guy said, this is Kim giving you permission to remember like the other side of her, like the light, funny, basically you don't have to talk about that other side that he wasn't really talking about anyway. I just felt like that was like an excuse. I don't know how to say it without sounding insensitive, but I just felt like, okay, oh, this mouse is a sign that I can remember her in her happy moments. And I don't have to talk about those dark things that he never fully shared anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. For me, it's interesting. I feel like, Ryan, you have the more rose-colored glasses view of it, because what I was aware of was he never fully shared the story. And so, again, for me, it was this experience of like, yeah, I feel there's a vulnerability here. I feel there's something you're wanting to share and to communicate, and yet you've never gotten it fully out. And then for me, even that Eric Nice-led cacao ceremony, which, you guys, please understand, literally, I've spent many nights in Joshua Tree in medicine ceremonies, puking my guts out, doing all sorts of things. So this is like up my alley, right? I sat there watching this being like, this ceremony, I don't fully understand what I'm watching. I feel like we've never gotten to the heart of the ceremony. I don't even understand what the framework of the ceremony is. This mouse is run in, to Taria's point. Suddenly, there's been this declaration of catharsis. I felt disconnected from it because, I felt like I didn't have the full story. I didn't really fully know where it was taking Glenn. And to me, that whole episode just kind of reflected this overall experience with LA, you know, homecoming LA, of we're trying to connect. It's not quite happening. We're trying, but we're falling short somehow.
But the thing with Glenn, though, I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying, but I do think Glenn's one of those people that I don't think is a communicator. So I was satisfied with this feeling inside of Glenn that I will never fully know the story, nor do I need to know the story because I got enough from that. So I was like, okay, at least Glenn's all right. But I didn't expect Glenn to be able to tell me a point A to point B story at all. But also then the disconnect, real world New York homecoming as opposed to real world Los Angeles homecoming. It was the same thing where you saw how people did change and how people didn't, thinking mainly of what's her name?
Becky.
Who left Becky. Yeah. Who left the show early. And also we found out talked to John Lennon in the house many times, which was amazing. But more importantly, you sensed there was this unique closeness, lightning in a bottle magic with that cast that they still can connect, you know, Kevin and all of these, they can connect. And it's just a complete opposite thing with LA when I brought it at the very beginning, but it always has been. It always has been with this cast. So it saddened me more than I could probably put into words watching this season, even though I loved it so much. Becky saddened me in the real world, the first season of the homecoming, but this every week there was something immeasurably sad in it for me.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think so much of it does come also from having watched it when it first aired or close to when it first aired, because time really has gone by. And I think especially with these seasons, you know, these first two anyway, I know they're filming New Orleans now, and I'm pretty sure there's no way they're filming that in the original house because I think the original house has been torn down. So in these first two seasons, though, they're literally recording it in the same space where it was originally filmed, and just to take in that passage of time and to, I think for us to have such evocative memories of who these people were in their youth, and that it's woven into the fabric of our own youth and our own memories, and to see, and it still feels like yesterday, because even though they as human beings have moved on and grown older, there's like an avatar of them that's preserved, you know, in perpetuity as who they were in their 20s and what they represented at that time and what they even still represent to this day. And so then to catch up with them now, and I think to your point, Ryan, to see these same struggles around connection and just the way even the house, it's like the same house, but it's different. And the walls are painted white and there's something kind of sterile about it. And maybe because they were filming still in COVID, to me, there was such a feeling of overall kind of emptiness to Venice. In this, it almost felt like they were on a soundstage or had been cleared off for filming. There was just such a sense of desolation and kind of humans just sort of lost in this bubble, kind of bumping up against each other and really not getting anywhere. And then at the end, acting like they had gotten somewhere.
And they were repeating cycles. Tammy not feeling like people have had her back. I'm sure she's felt like that in life, which is why she shuts down so she doesn't get hurt, right? Now, here we are talking about the Black Lives Matter issue. Everyone's willing to have the conversation. Her and David go on the patio. David gets upset. He goes off and she's explaining to them, see, this is what happens, blah, blah, blah. And David's on his phone and he's saying all these things about her. And not one person spoke up the first time. And then they say, oh, David, stop. In their confessional, they're saying, stop. But he's getting more and more aggressive on the phone. I will snatch her wig off. I will snatch her ball. All of those people, whether they were physically afraid or not, could have said, yo, chill out. Don't talk to her like that. Production, you need to remove him. Instead, they say nothing. Tammy wants to feel protected. And I have been there. So she calls her husband in. He comes. And then she says, I don't want you to do anything because I don't want to put you in a place now to be arrested. I'm putting you in a situation. I want to know. I'm showing these people. You don't have to have my back. My man is coming. He will take care of all of y'all. He will take care of David. But I really don't want him to. I just need y'all to see that I have somebody that has my back.
But also interesting that the production crew made that decision and the producers of like, David, you have to leave. We don't even like, I respected the fact that they're like, this is not what this show is about.
Yes.
This show is about let's like connect on this human level. We're not looking for this reality show moment, which
right.
A lesser production would have dreamed of that moment. Bravo makes its living on moments like that of like watching Tammy's husband confront David would have been something you saw previews for all week. And oh my God, I can't wait to see that scene. And they were like, no, we want you to leave. You don't have an option. We're going to put you in a hotel. Just you're going to go right now. You know, I thought that was an interesting aspect to this whole production.
And they didn't make Reggie leave, but the guy did come out and say, look, they're not bringing him back while you're here. So I don't want you hanging out here. I had some, it was a gentleman. I used to work like in an all men's clothing store. And so basically Friday and Saturday night, my boss wanted the few girls he had in there to dress as if not necessarily we were for sale, but like be appealing to the eye. So it drew the men in and they would spend clothes on Fat Farm, Aniche, like, you know, all these brands that were out there. And a young black man came in. He's about my age. And he started arguing with me and got so disrespectful. A friend of mine was a cop, a black guy that worked in the mall. So I called him. And in my mind, I was like, I just want you to be here so that way they can see I have somebody. But he actually started. And I was like, no. That's not what I want you to do. Like, he was ready to like fight the guy. And I realized in that moment what I had done. I just wanted to prove to him, you can't say anything you want to say to me because people have my back. But the person that was having my back was really serious about shutting this guy down. And I feel that's exactly what Tammy did. In my marriage, I have always said to my husband, you need to have my back in front of people. I don't care if it's your mom, your dad, whoever, you need to have my back. So you need this. But really, I don't want him to be mean to people. I've always felt like no one's had my back. So now when we see these same people, you better have it and show them that you have it. And I felt that's what Tammy did in that moment, not realizing, girl, you're like, if he goes out here and fights him, he's going to jail. And you don't want that.
But it's so interesting too, because honestly, the way that fight broke down, I ended up just feeling bad for both of them. Like, I really felt bad for both of them because they both just felt so, in just such deep pain. I don't condone David's behavior when he makes that decision to go back into that cruelty, which again, he did that in 93. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing it in 2021 to protect himself. I don't condone his behavior. This is where he's his own worst enemy. And to be quite honest, I don't think I'd want to spend much time with David personally, but human being to human being, when I feel the pain of being misunderstood, my heart goes out to him. And I feel the part of him that does want to say it's not fair, you know, because even though you're saying people didn't take a stand for Tammy in a strong, real way, I still feel like they take more of a stand for her than they do for him in the place where she was shutting him down out in the patio. And she did say, you have a slave mentality.
Yeah, she did.
You know, it's like, Tammy's a powerful woman. And so then there are these choices that she's making to shut things down.
Yeah.
And then there's a response on the other side that in some ways mirrors her own tendency to shut down. And Tammy can give as good as she gets. So there was something for me about the way she brought in her husband. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. And I also feel this flavor of like a Trump card. And it's almost like, I kind of want to say to Tammy, like, you are a powerful woman. So maybe let's own your power. Maybe let's own your impact. And I don't know, something to me, I just keep hearing the word sideways. Like something went sideways there where Tammy's like, okay, I'm calling in the big guns and you can deal with my husband. It's like, wait a second. Or you can deal with David. I don't know. I don't know what I want to say here. Or like, you can stay in the fire with him. You're essentially saying, stay with me here. Stay with David here. You are two powerful human beings. Now, Tammy, I think, is much smarter than David. But justice for David in this moment, this is one thing I'm going to say about David that I'm picking up on for him. No, because I'm really feeling it for him. I was saying earlier, and I felt this when I was kind of intuitively exploring earlier before the recording, that I do feel something like that David is sort of the voice that's saying, even if he's not aware of it, that David's the voice that's saying, wait, there's more here. This isn't black or white, no pun intended. Like there's complexity here. Let's slow this down. And it's funny because I've been talking about how David, I experience him as limited. And I think there's truth to that. But it's almost like what I'm suddenly getting with David is that there's a gift to what I might call his slowness, like that there is something, quote unquote, limited about him. But the gift of that is that he could be the person who slows things down and is like, wait, let's talk about this. Like, wait, there's more. Wait, I need to go slowly because I can't take all this in. I need you to explain things to me really carefully. I need time now to explain my side really carefully. And I feel like there's actually a gift to that because it would force us all to slow down. You know, again, just going back to my original point, my whole experience of this cast is I won't tolerate slowing down because there's so much that wants to come through. But I just feel bad for David in this moment, in that place where it's like, this feels like a guy who's slow, who's always been in environments that has no respect or support for his slowness. And he's trying to keep up and he feels vulnerable and he feels powerless and he's fucking pissed.
It's funny you say that. It gives me another perspective because I'm not going to lie. I'm going in looking at him like, the things that you said to Tammy, you didn't go that deep with the other woman. So it hurts the most when it comes from somebody who's supposed to protect me. You have a Black daughter. You know the bigger conversations about hair. You know all this stuff. And it hurts more coming from somebody like you. So now I don't want to stay. So now you are going to deal with my husband, because really it's hurtful when somebody looks like you is saying these things. And to other people, it might be like, oh, they're just laughing about her wig. And it's like, because you notice when Tammy said the first time they brought up a wig, it doesn't mean I don't have hair under these. Mm-hmm. Because for Black women, it's the assumption that you don't have any hair underneath when you're wearing wigs all the time. And some don't. There's a big thing with edges and thinning and all of that. So I feel like with her, when she said, stay a slave, it's like, it's coming from you. So I'm sure you guys have heard the conversation about Black men not protecting Black women as a whole. Did you notice the backlash that, going off real quick, Tiki Barber kind of got with his wife, Tracy? She was Asian, but it was a woman of color that he left. And he's now with a white woman, right? Nick Cannon has said outside of his mouth, Black men want to be with white women because it is like a medal for them, because we weren't allowed to have them before. And now we can't. So it's a medal, right? So we're taking that in like, wow, again, I'm using David probably shouldn't as a representative of all of those people. Like, how could you say this to her in front of them after the argument that we just talked about? So for me, I can be honest, say the only time I really felt for David was in the beginning when he told his story. I was crying because I could see both sides. I could see that it wasn't fair that he was left holding. And I still feel that it wasn't fair that he was left holding that and he was hurt. And I was so glad that Tammy, you know, they all showed emotion. But then when he became, when his reaction was so cruel, and that's probably because of where I've come from, I was like, oh no, completely. Like, Tammy threw that out there to completely shut him down, like, be a slave.
And amazing behind the scenes footage of that David getting thrown out that they didn't show in the original series.
Yes.
The people talking, of the call, all that stuff. I thought that was really gave such kind of a chilling footage in terms of what David experienced. And I agree with you, Taria, is that he really did explain it. And I was very moved. And I was like, wow, like, he did really deal with something, a big thing.
A big thing.
But like I said earlier, you know, David, I think if it wasn't this situation, there was going to be a situation in his life. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just the feeling I get. And also, I don't know if it's all right, but just to bring up John, even because I know we're far into this, but now here's somebody that I found interesting too, just in the sense that you even had Tammy saying that thing of like, John, I want you to get some pussy. I do. Cause he's still a virgin. He's still a virgin. And John was like, yo, that's not what I'm looking to do. And here is somebody that I'm like, this man has lived a noble life. I'm sure he has helped a lot of youth out there in his town, and his, and seems also, and I could be wrong, somebody that is willing to learn, somebody that is willing to, like, be easy to paint John as some like redneck hick that doesn't, you know, like a country guy. And the guy seems like, and like I said, it could be wrong, but it feels like he has this really huge heart. And I was really interested to always hear how he handled a situation, whether it be David's drinking, whether it be, you know, like just so, like, talking bluntly, but not with anger, and not with like, I was so impressed. I get impressed by people like that like are able to take Beth's like, well, you weren't a minister at my wedding, and be like, Beth, I understand. But like to somebody that's not defensive about themselves. I think that's such a rare quality, and to talk beautifully about his dad passing. And I don't know. I would be remiss not to say that I was very impressed with John in the revisiting of this.
Can I just go back for one more moment to Tammy and David, though? I think, like, in hearing all of this, what stands out to me so boldly, and maybe this is even stating the obvious, it's just so interesting that in that conversation about BLM, that Tammy and David were both bringing in what to me felt like such crucial viewpoints. Like you had Tammy bringing in the systemic, which is so important, right? And then you had David bringing in how we turn on ourselves. And both of these things feel like important pieces of the conversation in the way that it became combative rather than synergistic. And I think I started thinking about this because what is interesting to me is that David was speaking to the way we turn on each other. And when I was listening to you, Taria, kind of talk about how let down Tammy felt by him, and then I was thinking how let down he felt by her, I was like, isn't it interesting that it became that?
Yeah.
You know, and so
yeah, it did. Yeah.
Tammy saying the systemic is where it's at. And I want to be clear, I'm not disagreeing with her. I mean, I hear her say, if it weren't for the systemic oppression, that's what creates the hothouse where we're turning on each other, right? And so she's bringing in a really important viewpoint, but it's so interesting that she's doing it at the expense, at least in my impression, of what David's saying, which is like, but we're also turning on each other. And then she's helping to create a situation where they are actually turning on each other, where literally she's pitting a black man against a black man. David was literally talking about like black men killing each other. Mm-hmm. And then she's participating in creating a situation of a black man versus a black man.
And I'm glad that she recognized that at the end. To your point, and what Ryan was saying, I want to touch on John too later, because all these pastors that we've seen come through TV and Bravo, when I saw John, I feel like John is a person who is willing to learn. John has a pastor's heart. That is the heart that a pastor should have. A pastor's heart is not about them. It's about the people they shepherd. And you can tell John has that. I would offer this viewpoint when Tammy got upset when he said about we need to fix us first. If he had done it, if we were talking about the world coming together to go up against the system or the government is one thing. But when he's saying to me, what feels strongly, what Tammy heard was him saying, we turn it on each other. Ronald Reagan started that black on black crime as if there wasn't white on white, Hispanic on Hispanic, right? So you say that, you put that out there. Now the focus is just on black people killing black people fighting mm-hmm. black people. So you're going to say, and again, it's something I think that's embedded. It's you don't embarrass me in front of people that don't look like us, right? So now you're going to sit in my face and use the analogy that this man started to paint a narrative of us. So you're going to say, we need to fix each other. We have that conversation around the kitchen table. You don't say that out loud, because mm-hmm. then I know my fear is when you don't have time, I could have that conversation with y'all and say, well, look, this is why I feel that way when he said that us, right? But you're on a show, there's limited time, you don't know what's going to be shown. So you can't really go that deep to say, so when someone that looks like me says that, it takes me right back to other people that don't look like me saying it to justify the killing of us.
Right.
So for him to say that, it was like, how can you say what the man who doesn't look like us said to justify the killing of us by mm-hmm. saying it's us? When you know that's not so, I think that's what Tammy felt in that moment. And instead of them going into that, which would have been a very good conversation, it was, you know, you're a slave.
I'm sitting here talking about like, oh, can you imagine if they were willing to slow it down and to be present to what's really coming up? I mean, it's asking a lot of anyone. I mean, this is just something that's not taught in our culture, right?
It's not, right.
So, I mean, I understand it's a big ask. It requires self-awareness. It requires maturity. It requires the capacity to tolerate emotions and vulnerability. I mean, and especially when it's about issues that are so charged and so complex. It's, I mean, again, I just go back to the overwhelm I felt at the start of this. It's this notion of there's so much that wants to come through. There's so many different sides that want to be said. Because, yeah, when I hear you say everything you're saying, I'm like, oh, of course, that makes total sense. And then I also go back to what we also explored around how David most likely feels so let down,
right?
You know, by the community, you know, by black women, by black men. And so that he's just coming from a place of like, fuck this. Like, you know what I mean? And you notice when he really started going into that flippant attitude is when Beth came out and started kind of adding fuel to the fire.
Yes.
That's when he was really like, you know what? I'm just earning my money and I'm going to do what I need to do. And you could feel it. It's like, you don't really believe this. This is sort of like a defense mechanism. This is what you're retreating into
Yeah.
Because there's some part of you that, yeah, you don't feel seen. You don't feel heard. There's a history of Beth colluding with Tammy, whether Tammy yes. was a part of it or not, to kind of team up against you. He feels history repeating itself. And he's yeah. just like, I'm out. And now I'm going to say a bunch of provocative shit just to like ruffle your feathers.
When you guys are saying, like Ryan saying Beth is going to be Beth and you're saying Beth colluding, Beth had a conversation with Irene in the room. Irene's laying down and Beth is like, I guess no means yes or something. And then Beth is in her confessional like, I'm upset that nobody but me stuck up for Tammy. Nobody. And it was a very much like, oh, like I felt like a, oh, okay, you're going to come out. It's like, I was the one that stuck up for Tammy. She didn't even say like when they were laughing and maybe she was too young to articulate it, but well, we were laughing because it was uncomfortable. What did you think? She was like, I wasn't laughing. You were. And I get why you were laughing. You were uncomfortable, but like you were, which then almost adds fuel to David. Like you're lying. You were laughing.
And yeah, I think there's something really specific to David for David around being misunderstood in the place of joking. Like, again, I go back to that moment with John where he was joking about stealing things from the party. I think there's something when like David feels unguarded and he's being playful and he's joking with someone. Yes. Feel like that's connected to his experience and expression of love. And so when he gets, yeah, misunderstood there, and not just misunderstood in a subtle way, but like these, and suddenly I want to say these women are coming at him. That suddenly feels important for some reason. If he were here, I'd ask him about that. But these women are coming at him, pointing a finger, being like, you did this and you did that and you're a rapist. It's just, I can just feel it. It's like, it feels like the deepest wound for him.
I want to ask y'all something. What was your initial reaction? You see David talking about, he asked me, could he hang a Confederate flag? You see it back then. And then he talks about it now. And then just as casual, no, you really didn't ask me that.
I was shocked.
A troublemaker will always be trouble. I mean, like, okay. It was just like, I mean, to me, that was very frustrating.
Yeah.
Because David really took that in. Because he really took that in and said, wow. And that, like, for somebody to even entertain the thought that they could be dark like that, which he did, but not in a horrible way of like, I might have used to. He just said, that does not sound like me. But if I did, oh my God, because we did see John say a lot of stupid things back in the day. But they were silly. They were like silly dumb, you know? And so that was a very frustrating moment.
Because you hear Confederate and you know where everyone, no matter what color you are, you know where everyone's mind goes to when you hear Confederate. So when he did that, I was like, what?
It was kind of glossed over because I want to say again, as someone who was rewatching 93, when that part came out that David was saying that John had talked about hanging up a Confederate flag, I mean, I was shocked. I mean, talk about labeling someone.
Right.
And even in 93, I was like, I guess this is a sign of the times that this is being glossed over. This feels so, it made me feel terrible for David because I'm like, that's a legitimately racist thing to basically be saying. And so then when David came out in 2021 that he had made that up and they sort of talked about it, but
and
it's
he laughed about it.
I feel like that's sort of where David didn't really step in and say, hey, this is where I was coming from. This is why I did it. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Kind of like the cacao ceremony. It was another instance where I just felt like, wait, something got glossed over here. And I feel like you are acting like you talked about this, but did the air really clear? Because it's a huge deal that you threw that lie out there about him.
I don't know. I just found that really icky. Oh, and one more question. Y'all cannot leave me out here by myself. What, Ryan, what, Jamie, do y'all think of Irene? Off the top of your head, what's the first word that comes to mind? You can't think about it.
Snake in the grass.
Snake in the grass. And what did you say, Ryan?
Well, I mean, it's one of those. I mean, I listen, there's a whole other thing about Tammy, too, is, you know, in regards to the police work, law enforcement. That's a huge part of her life. And she really is trying to like, well, I can see both sides. I am part of the Black Lives Matter movement. But from her perspective, I'm sure she definitely does see both sides. And but it's one of those things, too, on that deeper discussion about law enforcement is that these people are in charge of society in this certain way. But sometimes it doesn't mean they're the best or the brightest. Tammy did put herself out there on that front line for Los Angeles or California. But at the same time, would you say that Tammy has everything figured out in life? No, she doesn't have anything figured out in her own life.
You mean Irene?
Irene. No, Irene doesn't have anything in her own life. You know, she's been through four relationships, which, by the way, the human heart can love many people. I'm not saying anything about that, but these people are put in charge of making the right decision all the time and enforcing that. And that's a pretty big responsibility. And my thought always with Irene was, how do we know, you know, it's like judge and jury. How are
yes.
you realize, and no, I don't want to offend law enforcement, but there is that thing of how do we know that all of these people are the right people and they're dealing with issues just like all of us. And where does that understanding end with them? I don't know. It's an interesting question, but I also can't get a read on her, which I would be almost more curious about Jamie. Cause I just feel like average. I just can't get
like past a certain point with her.
Yeah.
Like Beth was crying about Tammy and she goes, sorry, you feel that way.
I keep thinking about that moment, which on the one hand, part of me was like, oh, that's kind of cool. You have boundaries with dramatic Beth. You know, this is kind of Irene saying, like, I'm not going to indulge you here. But yeah, there was also something so unfeeling about it, right? It just was like this kind of stonewall reaction. You know, I've never poked around Irene, but it is interesting. I mean, obviously, I came up with Snake in the Grass, and we sort of touched on this earlier. I do notice, Taria, basically, I agree with you. I'm noticing as I watch Homecoming, something just doesn't sit right. Like, I'm like, you make things sound good. You make things look good, but I don't fully trust what's happening here. And I don't know why. I just know that there's something here that feels untrustworthy to me. Like, you know how to present a certain face to the world and to the camera, and we're not seeing everything.
There was something deeply sinister. It's one thing when Beth says, that's what a rapist would do, right? If even if Irene had said, that's what a rapist would do, there is something sinister. You are a cop. And you said, I will call the cops and scream rape. Something in that, it was like, you do know if you do that, what is going to happen to him.
I mean, I think even in retrospect, admits that I regret this. And thankfully, because, okay, like she is able to realize that was a bridge too far, especially coming from a law enforcement perspective, especially coming from that perspective. And that's what I'm like, these people, they are our judge and jury. They're supposed to help us and protect us.
Right.
When they're not able to see a situation fully clearly, then it's very scary because you're like, we saw this on TV. What are we not seeing on TV when you're just out in your everyday life?
Well, and that's what's so interesting about her because, I'm glad you brought that up, Ryan, because it's making me remember that was a great moment for her. And I was so relieved to hear her take responsibility and to also explain, I was afraid. Which, by the way, that's like, again, my point, right? It's like, there's a fear in Irene in 93, and rather than tolerating it and saying, hey, this is the place where I'm afraid because David, you feel out of control. Instead, it's like something shuts down and she just goes in for the kill. So there's that side of Irene, which I appreciate, but then there's just this other aspect to her. It, you know, the other moment that stands out to me, which was a huge moment, and I'm kind of curious on your guys' read on this, but when the BLM conversation did get underway, and suddenly Irene stands up, ostensibly in defense of Tammy, and drops the N-word, I just was like shocked. My jaw was on the floor, just like, how can you be this thick-headed about this issue? Like, you're stepping in as like an ally here, and you're trying to take responsibility for your role in all this as a cop. And I hear you saying all these things that, again, look and sound great. And then you do something that, to me, suggests some sort of deep disconnect at the very least.
And it's like, how would you not know? Just like Tammy said, I would never use a racial slur that's used against her community, even to explain something. When she did it, it almost felt like, you said something. I was going to say she always says the right thing in her confessionals. And then I didn't say it. And you said she always shows the camera the right thing. Like, she always presents the right thing. Well, but how do we know it's true? So in that moment, I felt like She was almost like an actor. It didn't even seem natural. It felt forced. You know what I mean? And for her to be a woman of color and not recognized, I will say I was proud of Tammy in that moment because she was trying to explain to Glenn. In Glenn's mind, even I have to remember to make sure I try to look through the lens of other people after my initial reaction is, how could you? So in Glenn's mind, not that I get where he's going, but I could have a conversation with him because he eventually became receptive. The only issue is it's like, don't dispute my experiences. But eventually, I think he heard what Tammy was saying. With Irene, it was like, I'm going to be honest, I felt like you have said that word before and not in defense of. Mm. And it's easy for you to say, even though this feels forced, you've said that word before and probably in uniform. That is just what I get from her. I don't trust her. I do not. Because you were very clear to say, I marched with my son with BLM. I don't even know, had BLM even been brought up yet, like that terminology? Or did she bring it up and say, I've marched with my son with BLM, but I also support my brothers and sisters in law enforcement?
Well, I think it was in the context of the Tammy David's discussion at the time, which I believe did bring up BLM, but it was in the context of that conversation, you know?
It just struck me like her whole, I felt like she was maneuvering that situation. Like, I marched with my son for BLM. Now I marched with my son and our fellow brothers and sisters for BLM, but y'all have to understand, I also understand the perspective of my brothers and sisters in uniform. When certain terminology is used, it's almost like, feel like I get what you're saying, like your brothers and sisters. We know they have a code. I have friends that are police officers, so we know all of this. She just feels very, I wouldn't want to be her friend. If me and my girlfriends were out and she came, it would be very surface. I would be very limited in what I would say because there's something about her that rubs me the wrong way. And I feel like in that moment, when she said what she said, that is not the first time you said it. You guys know what I'm saying. I just feel very weary of her.
Well, yeah. I mean, to your point, the way that I kind of read her stepping in this moment, because Tammy had been very forthright with her about, you know, you need to be an ally and this is the way you need to show up. And yeah, it felt to me almost like that did knock Irene off center.
Yes.
And then she was kind of like, because you called it maneuvering and force. When she stepped in that way, for me, the subtext really felt like, I'm stepping in the way that Tammy said I'm supposed to step in. And I'm proving something about the way that I'm an ally, which in and of itself just felt uncomfortable to me because she felt like, to me, she almost felt like this little girl who's kind of performing a part. But then again, to drop in the N-word in that moment, I just keep hearing the word disconnect. Like, how do you not know? Never. Like, you never use that word, first of all. Certainly, literally, we're having a conversation about Glenn not using that word. And in context of this conversation, you're using that word. It was so bizarre to me. And so that's the place where I say it almost feels like there's something deeply disconnected in her. And I think that's where it's hard for me to fully trust her because I just have this question, what is going on with you here? And yeah, I also keep hearing the word political. Like, there's just something very political about her and the way she navigates these situations.
Well, I think that's also like where we are in America, too, is that a lot of us navigate things through a political lens now. I mean, unfortunately, like, I never grew up navigating things through any kind of political lens. Maybe that was just my youth. And maybe I don't even know if I should be doing it now, but it does seem to, in this day and age, 2022 seems to be the last 3 years, especially, everything is through the lens of political discourse. So of course I feel the show is going to pick up on that energy as well. Yeah. But I also think that nobody admits on The Real World or reality shows in general is that it's far out of their depth.
Right. And that they're on camera. And by the way, just to be clear, when I say political, I actually didn't mean politics. I meant political, like, you know, like the adjective, like there's something very political.
Okay.
her. Well, but I even make it in terms of like the political, in terms of like the BLM and all, you right. have the yeah, sense is, yeah. of this underlying political navigation yeah. of people trying to be like, well, I'll tell you what I believe in. I'm amazing at this and this and this and BLM. And mm-hmm. we didn't use our president's name in this or our ex-president's name in yeah. this show, but it's hovering over, I yes. feel, in a lot of ways.
And I agree. And I think, Ryan, what you said is people are coming from the person that you're standing up for wants to hear, this is what I've done. I'm standing up for you. I've marched, when it could come off very, even if the person doesn't mean it, to very performative, when mm-hmm. I'm more so open to, even if you said, well, I mean, what is it that you're looking for? Just to create constructive dialogue, even if we walk away not agreeing, right. but there has to be some forward movement. And in that house, there was absolutely no forward movement on anything. The one situation I will say, and I'll see if you guys agree. At first, I didn't know where Tammy was going with it, but I liked it. So you brought up when she said, I want you to get some. I don't want you to leave this world, blah, 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 blah. Beth and John go downstairs and he's like, when I pivot, you pivot. She was like, oh, okay, sorry, blah, blah, blah. Then they go back on the rooftop and Tammy was like, John's probably mad at me. Then she says, I'm sorry. They go through all that. Later that night, she says, what were y'all whispering about? And I'm thinking in my mind, like, they were, I mean, that was, you know, their business. That's where I was with it. And she's like, if we're going to be honest, we're going to be honest. And I like how she almost forced him to say it, because if she had not, somebody else could have made that joke again and it would have infuriated John. And he would have never said what he said. I'm a youth pastor. I'm trying to live a moral life. People talking about my sex life could affect the kids that I mentor. So when all that came out, I said, I don't know if she did that on purpose, but it kind of even taught me about life too. Ask, well, what were you guys talking about this situation? Because I want to know so I don't offend or whatever before. So I kind of like that.
I want to say I loved him. Watching 93 and then watching Homecoming, I walked away from it just feeling like, I love this woman. She's so interesting and dynamic.
I love her hair. Her 93 hair was just amazing.
I had that same haircut. That was the, yeah, I was like, ah!
What I want to say though is when we were talking about Tammy earlier, I just kept hearing the word wizard. And when I hear you, Taria, it's like, because I do think there's something perceptive about her. I think there's spiritual knowing in her. And that moment with John on the patio, what I loved about that, to me, it felt like a twofold experience where one, she's playing this game, like she's great at reality TV, right? She's bringing things out and she pretty much just owns it on camera. She's like, look, we're here to sort things out. And so we're going to do it. And I also think she was speaking to something that was true. And, you know, it was interesting because when you guys were talking about John as the youth pastor and his willingness to listen, I want to say, like, yeah, I do. I feel that part of him. I think John has good intentions. Like, he's a nice guy. But I do want to say what Tammy made me really aware of in that moment was like, but he's another one. He's really aware of how he's coming off. And there's a game that John's playing too. And I don't know. I just appreciated that she called something out there and she helped me to see John is a part of this dynamic. Back in 93, he was headstrong and stubborn like everyone else was. And in 2021, he may not be as headstrong, but there's a certain game he's playing. I think going back to your point, Ryan, which I think is really important, just this notion of people being out of their depth briefly brought in this notion too, that they're on camera. And in that way, I feel for them. Like, I know how nervous I get just having, you know, a podcast that's like in the little corner of the world and saying, you know, maybe not speaking clearly or saying the wrong thing and being persecuted for it. These people are on an international platform in the middle of complex conversations. It's charged with personal history. And so there's a way in which my heart goes out for them because it's like, they're doing their best. Show up and have these conversations and also terrified out of their mind, they're going to get canceled. And
well, remember when in 93, John was the innocent too. Remember, he was the guy that got brought in that hadn't experienced the world. He had his little neck of the woods and he was going to be a country singer and he was exposed to all of these new ethnicities, locations, all of this stuff. We were supposed to see the real world house through his eyes in some ways. So in my thing is that I see what you're saying, Jamie, but at the same time, I was proud of John because I feel like he has found some sort of way in this life. He has figured out maybe I am a simple person, but I want to try to be a simple good person. You know, I know you're saying he's playing a game of some sort, but to me, he was the innocent then. And I just thought it was interesting. He's definitely still innocent, or if we're equating having sex to innocence, he is still in that place. But we have seen him grow as a man where I do feel like he tries to make the right decisions in life. You know, I'm trying to really take in your game comment.
Well, I don't want to when I say he's playing a game, I don't want to overstate it. It's not like I see him twirling his mustache like in a Machiavellian.
I don't even think he could grow one, to be honest.
I think that's what I'm saying. He means well. You know, I mean, look, we're all playing a game in a way, you know,
right,
any of us are on a reality show. We're thinking about how we're coming off. I think, but it's interesting that you say that you see him as the innocent one. I understand. Right. He was the Julie role. He was the Southern virgin.
Yeah, he was the young guy. He was the youngest in the house, I believe.
Yeah, he was 18. But what I will say, again, having watched it recently, he was really headstrong. He was really stubborn. He was right there in with everyone in terms of this tendency to not listen, not take other people in. And what I think so interesting about that, and you touched on this earlier, I actually thought he had a great chance of being successful too, because he actually had a lot of talent and a lot of fire in him. And so what's interesting to me about him now, like if I were to work with John, I'm just so curious about his relationship to his fire. You know, like he had such stage presence. He had a great voice. He was on fire on stage. And now, as you mentioned earlier, Ryan, it's like those dreams didn't pan out. He's never had sex. He's not in partnership. And I guess, I'm not judging his journey. If he's truly happy in what he's doing, great. Obviously, his life is of service and it's of value. But I do wonder, to what degree is this role as kind of the neutered, simple youth pastor a reflection of his genuine spirit? And to what degree is there this strong, fiery, creative sexual flame in him that for whatever reason he's disowned because he's scared to embody it all the way?
I mean, I would almost be comforted if he did have this strong sexual desire. But also, I think some people, I don't know, sometimes John does really come off very asexual to me. Is that some people just aren't.
In 93 though? Because his pelvis felt alive to me in 93. No, it did.
Listen, I don't know how to read pelvises. I'm trying to be better at it.
Wait, but Ryan's like David. I don't care what that man does with his penis.
No, like it's just one of those. I've been uncomfortable with my body in the past. I've been uncomfortable. And like sometimes the last thing I would want to do is get naked with somebody else. You know, like that is a really big thing. And I feel like if you get older in age, you get more used to that feeling. You get more used to like, I know my body, but to even bring somebody else in on this is at this point very hard for me to comprehend. I would imagine if you've gone that long, well, I guess I could probably go my whole life if I needed to. And I think that becomes much more of a reality.
There was two things that I picked up on that. He said it very quickly. And I wonder, did anyone else, when he said, I got to be honest, Tammy, in my small town, in my world, I wouldn't meet anybody like you, Tammy. And I thought, well, she's not a unicorn. She's smart. She's funny. But there are other people on varying degrees of that too. And then when he talked about what his political stance was and all, the third one was, I mentor, you know, black colored boys. And they made that. She was like, well, please don't call them that. So that's unreal. Where it's like the heart is. I can see when I, you know, said the pastor's heart, it's to be a servant. It doesn't mean that there aren't maybe some underlying things that are far from racist, but like biases or things that you just don't know. But I feel like he would be willing to have the conversation, maybe not on camera.
Right.
You know, I just picked up on those things very like, oh, okay.
I mean, I do hate about these shows too. And about this even is that like, I'm like, I want to see him 6 months in. I want Homecoming to be 6 months long. Yes. Like the first series yes. was. Like, I want to see what that's like. Like
me because too.
These 2 week or I don't even know how long it feels like. It's like 2 weeks they're in there or maybe even less than that. I mean, back in the old days, they were there for 6 months. Got used to seeing John, like with his cool, like, you know, his big cooler of Kool-Aid with him that he would just carry around the house. And like, I want to get to know who they are now and stuff. And I think that's the interesting thing about these shows of just even the age aspect of getting older, and for us to watch it, and we ourselves have gotten older, and it really does is this makes me contemplate what I've learned in my life and where I'm going. And that's the power of these shows, and especially Real World Homecoming, is that I really do. It's this not only seeing what they've turned out like, but also then turning the mirror on yourself and seeing how I've turned out like, you know, because I was a kid. I did, my whole life was ahead of me when I watched this show. Like, and now I have to take stock of, well, I thought they would be here. Where am I?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. I just keep going back to what you said about people being out of their depth. And I think both in terms of what's happening culturally, but also to the emotional stuff that we've talked about. And again, if we hold this cast as a group of people who have a lot to say, a deep desire to connect, but an unwillingness to tolerate those slower, more tender places where you're misunderstood, basically. And I think these reality shows are so powerful because they do give us such a reflection of our humanity, and they stir up all these issues. And then we get to have these great conversations like this. And I just also feel myself really wanting to do right by these people who put themselves out there, to actually give them a framework where they can truly work through this stuff. And it's not just Tammy by herself trying to navigate a conversation with this group of people. And by the way, Tammy dealing with her own blind spots, because we all have blind spots. It's, you know, I mean, I've talked about this on my podcast elsewhere. It's like, I feel mad at Bravo sometimes when I look at like the situation that Ebony was put into or Tiffany was put into, where it's like, you're giving lip service to this inclusion, but you're throwing these women into these situations. And what are you asking of them? Because like, where's the real support for people to be dealing with things that are out of all of our depth? I don't really know what I want to say about that other than to just acknowledge that these are truly complex issues. And yeah, a lot of these people are struggling. And I think to my original point way back when, I do experience this cast as people who have a lot of decency in them and a desire to connect in them. And that it's effing hard when we're trying to navigate the complexity of all this on a national global platform.
Keep going back to in out of your depth and stuff, but like, it's a very relatable feeling. Like, I feel out of my depth a lot of the times, or I'll even say on my podcast, I'll say, hey, you know, I'm not the person that I don't think I can speak intelligently about this. In fact, I was talking about Jenny from Salt Lake recently, and I said, I know my feelings, and my feelings are full of piss and vinegar and just like, you know, bluster and da da da. But at the same time, I sometimes don't know if I have the nuance to discuss these things. And I do. I think there's this eternal doubt that I see some of those people in the real world struggle with, or they're not struggling with it and they should be, because they think, no, I got it. I got it. I can handle this. I got the weight of it. I got it. My voice is important.
Wow.
It needs to be heard.
Yeah. Instead of realizing that maybe, you know, we're supposed to have all of our voices are somewhat important, right? But also to classify yourself of like, I know how to speak about this issue. Like, we have to get to a point with any reality show or any of our own lives is that it's okay to not know. It's okay to not know how you're coming to this. If I had a plan for everything I wanted to say, that would worry me, you know?
Yeah.
And also to be willing to listen. But just to bring it back to the Tammy David thing, to me, that was just such a classic example of neither one of them was curious about the other's viewpoint. It was just like, my viewpoint needs to be heard and you're not hearing me, so I'm going to shout even louder to be heard, rather than, okay, let me check in with you. Right. Let me ask you about where you're coming from and why. And maybe, I mean, I think you even said it to me earlier. It's like, I may not agree with you, but let me just listen, trusting that if I listen to you, I then get to get heard on the other side, you know? So, all right, you guys, I know we got to end this at some point. Any last quick final word, thought to slip in there before we go?
I mean, I just like what you just said, though. I mean, like, maybe we strive to be more loosey-goosey with things, of like being willing to like come to where somebody's at and to listen to them. And that's why I think these importance of these shows and in this Real World Homecoming especially is such a breath of fresh air for me after dealing with Bravo and the extreme, it's reality on steroids when we're all just normal people in the real world. Like, when it back in these days, it was real people and the real world before celebrity culture took over everything. So I really find this to be, I recommend it to everybody, and you might not fully enjoy it, but I think there's some really interesting things happening in season one and season two of Homecoming.
I agree. It was definitely refreshing. Definitely. It makes you look at your own life. And then whenever I react strongly to something, whether it's on TV or whether it's Bravo or whether it's the real world, I automatically ask myself, why are you reacting so strongly to that? There's got to be a reason, whether you experienced it, someone else, you experienced it. So it's a way to almost keep yourself honest to like, oh, I see why I was firmly with Tammy, because those are some of the things that, you know what I mean, that I've mm-hmm. been through. I was going to share with you guys real quickly. I was working in a store, had on a cute halter dress at that men's clothing store, and the men would come in and spend money. And one of the men kept asking me out on a date, and I said no. And so then he went behind me and untied my thing. If I didn't have quick reflexes, my entire top would have fallen to the entire store. It was a Friday, Saturday night. The mall was full. And my boss says, I mean, he spends a lot of money here. So I was like, no one, none of the men. And I was waiting for some of the other guys to be like, yo, what are you doing? None of that. So when I see Tammy in that blanket, I feel her. So I was resolutely, of course, on her side, still understanding David's side. But there was a point where I wasn't willing to go any further with him. And mm-hmm. so then that makes me say, okay, let me examine myself and what I need to work on. So like Ryan said, very self-reflective in these shows. And that's why I love them. So we can have deep convos like this.
Yeah. And I'll just say, like, I just know from my own life experience in terms of just personal relationships, the moment that I got willing to listen in conflict and in those moments where it was all about my point of view needs to be seen and heard, that is when things started changing so drastically, you know. And I think also the last thing I'll say, kind of to both of your points, it's just the fact that, yeah, there's never one viewpoint. There is no one. I mean, and that's what, you know, Tammy kicked this whole thing off saying we were two people with two different perspectives on the same thing. There's never one truth. And when we assume, like Ryan's saying, when we assume we know everything about one thing, it's just, there's nowhere to go.
I mean, it's nice. That's why I would imagine would be the attractiveness of math sometimes, because, you know, there's an answer, you know, there's like, well, 2 + 2 = 4. I don't know how you're going to argue it. That's what it is. There has to be some things that are just nice, but that's what the frustrating things that this is a show that reminds you again, that we just all don't agree at the end. Like we all, that can be beautiful, but it can also be messy and sad.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for being here, for contributing your wisdom. I want you guys to let people know where they should look for you.
So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. We do like 4 to 5 episodes a week. Pick out whichever one you like or whatever guest you like. These guys have both been on the podcast. I also have a Patreon, but you don't need it. But if you want extra stuff, it's there, you know, but it's always going to be there. And then, Instagram, So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. It's just try to be silly. That's it.
Thank you for having me. I enjoy talking to you both. Yes, go to Ryan's Patreon. Don't listen to him saying you don't need it. You do. Podcast is great. Yeah. You can find me at WeGo, WEIGO podcast, acronym for What Else Is Going On. Same on Twitter. I have a Patreon that you do need also, patreon.com/whatelseisgoingon. And if you can't commit, I get it. But if you want to buy me a coffee, buymeacoffee.com/WeGo podcast. And I have a podcast, in case you didn't guess, where it can be found everywhere.
And as always, follow me on Instagram if you don't already, Jamie Stein, JAMIESTEIN. And you can head to my website, hollywoodreadings.com, if you're curious about my work. All right, you guys, thank you so much for being here. It feels like such a privilege and a gift to be with you both. And I had so much fun talking about the real world.
Thanks for having me. That's truly a gift. Thanks, dude.
All right, you guys, I'll see you on the flip side. Bye.